Welcome to Mind the Skills Gap, where we explore the barriers to skills transfer and how you can overcome them, flavoured with a sprinkle of neuroscience and AI. In this episode, two of our technical specialists, Jan Panacook and Nick Torfs, give us answers to some of the regular technical questions we get from customers about our upskilling platform. Listen in to hear how we tackle security at Stellar Labs, why we use multiple programming languages, and how we use AI to save you days of design time. I'm Stella Collins, an evangelist for the neuroscience of learning and co-founder and chief learning officer at Stellar Labs. Watch out, Skills Gap. We're coming for you. Hello and welcome back to Mind the Skills Gap. Today I'm really, really happy to be talking with two of my favourite colleagues, Jan Panacook and Nick Torfs, who are our technical team behind all the kind of clever wizardry at Stellar Labs. And we just wanted to ask you both kind of, you know, to give us a bit of an insight into what it's like working at Stellar Labs, but also some of the questions that our customers ask us about the technical aspects of what we do. You know, I answer lots of questions about the science and the neuroscience parts, but we do get asked lots of technical questions, and it would be really helpful for us and our customers and all sorts of other people, I guess, to just understand a little bit more about what that's like. So perhaps Jan, you've just been promoted to Chief Technical Officer, so it'd be really great to hear from you and your friendly cat, who I can see sitting on your knee. Leave the cat, he's lovely. Tell us a little bit about you and, you know, your previous experience and how that shaped your role at Stellar Labs. And congratulations on the CTO, by the way.
Thank you very much, first of all, also for getting the chance to become the CTO. Well, I started at Stellar Labs almost 2 years ago, and before that, I did all different kinds of roles. Started initially after my studies as a master in informatics, I started doing development, and then started growing into mobile development also. Worked for basically the biggest banking companies in Belgium, like KBC, Belfius, and so on. Worked over there with their teams. And after development, I started getting into becoming a Scrum Master also, because I felt that I was quite, I loved helping teams out, and not only on a technical way, but also on how the teams work and improving how teams were working. And so I became Scrum Master, Agile Coach, but I always kept like the feeling with the technical side of things. I really like doing technical things, and even in my spare time, I try to do some programming and keep up to date with all what's happening in the technical world. And that's how I ended up with Stellar Labs. I was switching positions and Raf contacted me saying, like, we're looking for some senior developers who can join us and build the platform. And I was like, that was perfect timing for me. I took 2 weeks off first, some vacation, and then I joined Stellar Labs. And it has been a blast since then, and now for almost 2 years, as I said, and that's really fun, and time is really flying by.
Great. And Nick, how about you? How did you arrive at Stellar Labs, and where have you kind of come from?
Well, I think it's quite similar to Jan. I started out as a consultant, so I did a lot of different businesses and sectors, different technologies. I think that really helps with what we're doing here right now. I also always had my side business in which I needed to tackle everything technically. So that's kind of a great start to go into a startup. Like Jan, Raf contacted me on a good moment. I made the choice. We started together, and now we're here for 2 years already.
And Nick, what aspects of Stellar Labs' mission kind of, you know, excites you and resonates most with you personally?
So for me, a lot of my learning has always come from experimentation and experience. Theory was never really my thing. I could not really study well through theory, but it was always through experience and getting insights that I learned. And so when Yustella explained me the gear model, it really resonated with me. So that got me really excited about joining and being part of this project.
That's good. It's good to know it comes from personal experience. And Jan, how about you?
For me, it was, I agree with Nick. For me, it's also like studying by just reading a book, and then somehow you have to know everything that doesn't really fit with the way how I operate. I prefer to do things and just learn by doing. Learning by example is also one of the favorite things that I also tend to do. But also the fact that there is a continuous learning happening. We have to continuously keep on learning. It's impossible to just learn until you're 25 and then completely stop learning. And there's a lot of stuff that on a daily basis we need to learn. And the fact that StellaLabs is there to help companies and to help people within those companies to keep up on a decent way and a way that it's beneficial for both the company, but also for the people who are doing the learnings. They're learning something that is useful for them, and they can transfer this knowledge into skills. And that's so important for everybody, for basically your whole working experience, lifetime, that you will keep on learning. And that was really, for me, the click, like, okay, I really love this mission and the fact that we are trying to help people out with StellaLabs.
And IT is definitely one of those things where you have to keep learning, you know, just all the time. It just moves along so quickly.
Indeed.
So if we think a little bit about StellaLabs and the things you're developing there, what are the things that, you know, upcoming features, developments, what are the things that you're currently most excited about?
There's a lot of things happening. And as you mentioned, IT world is always changing. So we are also with the platform changing regularly. One of the features I know is coming and soon will probably pop up is the fact that we are going to start with the video integration. We already have Synthesia integration in the platform, so we already support Synthesia, but a lot of customers ask us also, like, we would like to upload our own videos. We want more video integration into the platform. And that's something that we haven't seen yet, but we have been working on it. We are technically almost ready to start building features around video integration. And next to that one, which is really also going to be a challenge and really helpful for our customers too, is for sure SharePoint integration. That people can start using their files, which are on their own SharePoint, and we can use them together with the StellaLabs platform and all the AI integration that we have running already, that we can build this on a decent way. So it will be a challenge for us to implement, and it will be really helpful also for our users. So
yeah, it's definitely something they're asking for, isn't it? And the video stuff, you know, I think right now we can, you know, we can embed YouTube videos and things like that, can't we? So I think that further video integration is going to be really, really useful. And what about you, Nick? What's exciting you right now?
So I think another one that's really interesting is Teams integration. Right now, we're fully a separate platform, but we want to integrate more into the workplace of our customers, right? And we think that, for example, with spaced repetition, if we can like use Teams for that, so really come into people's daily working environments, that we can really engage them even more with the stuff that they're learning. And I think that could be a great extra step forward to get that extra engagement that is needed for learning.
Yeah, and I think really for the work-based actions as well, if that's, you know, really, really part of your everyday work, that's going to be so useful, isn't it? So yes, I'm also really looking forward to that one. Now, one of the questions that lots of people ask, and I only have a very simple answer for it, so I'm really curious to get perhaps a slightly more in-depth answer, is people are always asking us about where are our servers? And I know this relates to people's concerns around GDPR and security. So can you give a slightly more exciting answer than the one that I usually give, or more accurate, perhaps?
I'll try. But yeah, first of all our servers are, of course, running in the cloud. We are using AWS services to run everything. Of course, we are running everything in Europe. And more in particular, I think most of our servers are in Ireland. I think even all of the servers are in Ireland and are hosted by AWS. Amazon, and they are fully ISO 27001 compliant, which basically means that for GDPR, they make sure that all the data is on their servers, is not being moved outside of Europe. So we stay within Europe with all our data at all time, trying to be indeed all the time GDPR compliant, of course, because it's really important that we protect the data of our customers at all times. So we really take care of that and thought about it when we started the platform. Where are we going to host it? How are we going to make sure that we can help our customers with this and that we are indeed also compliant with it? And that's where the servers are in Ireland, are all the machines.
That's usually the answer I give, Ireland, and that seems to keep people happy. But it's good to know that, you know, why you chose them and that they do meet these sort of, you know, rigorous standards and things.
Yeah, indeed.
Please excuse this interruption. At Stellar Labs, we help you build business-critical skills, not just knowledge. Add the missing pieces to your learning journeys to take people from knowing to doing. Want to know how? Visit stellarlabs.io to learn more. Now, back to the episode.
Nick, one of the things that was so exciting in the last year has been, you know, the implementation of AI into our platform. And I'm really curious about what your thoughts are about how, you know, we use it practically to enhance the customer experience, but, you know, kind of perhaps a little bit more about the deeper elements of how we use it. Can you explain for us in, you know, relatively simple terms, how we're using AI and perhaps, you know, what's exciting about the use of AI?
Right. The rise of large language models has been amazing for the kind of development that we're doing. I think there's three or four points where we use AI that are very important to our software, to our platform right now. First, we can generate a great skeleton of a course. So you want to create a course as a course designer. You put in three or four inputs, and we will generate transfer behaviors based on that. And from those transfer behaviors, we will generate a full course for you. Of course, you'll still have to check up on that course, change some details, but it gives you, it really avoids the white page syndrome. Like, where do you start when you're building a course? It's a great kickstart. That's how I typically look at it. I think that's our major start off. But then apart from that, we also, when you start adding content yourselves or new modules, we can generate scenarios for you, which are basically these small kind of role-playing scenarios, stories, where you can apply your knowledge in a safe way. So the AI generates a situation based on the content of your course, and you will have to choose a certain direction you want to go in, like how will you deal with that situation. But of course, as it's all a role-playing game, you don't have to fear about making mistakes. So it's a really great way to first apply your knowledge that you learned. Then after that, we have work-based actions. Of course, we can create our own, a designer can create their own work-based actions in the course. But we can also suggest some good actions based on the course again. So what can the learner do in his day job to apply the new knowledge? I think those are always really great. And then I think lastly, we do quiz questions assessments at the end of every module in a course in the gear model. And those we can generate as well, fill in the blank questions, multiple choice. We give some suggestions. You can always make your own, but it always gives you a good start, gives you some ideas. It uses the content of the course. And of course, they will get used later on as well for spaced repetition.
Personally, as you know, designing programs, it's so useful just to have this, you know, take away that white space, that white page problem where you think, oh my goodness, where am I going to start? So much easier once you've got something to build on and you think, oh yeah, I can use that, or maybe I don't need that piece. But it just really, really helps that kind of, helps with the creativity, I think, really helps with generating, you know, multiple ideas. And sometimes the AI comes up with things that maybe you wouldn't have thought of, which again, you can, you know, you can choose to use or you can choose to discard. But yeah, it just saves so much time. And certainly the spaced repetition questions, it's so boring to write questions about what people are learning. So that's really useful. And I think one of the things that I'm very, very happy is that we're very, very lucky that we had the full support of Donald Clark, who's probably one of the world's experts right now on AI and learning. And he fully supports what we're doing and has been, you know, incredibly helpful and I guess, you know, contributes ideas and things as well to the AI. So I'm sure there's a huge future for the AI, and I think we're going to be using it in more different ways apart from just generating content in the future. But that's more for another day, perhaps. Okay, so Nick, for our listeners that, you know, aren't as tech savvy as you guys, I often hear people talking about front end, back end, and I have a kind of a vague idea of what it means, but I think it would be useful for people to understand what's the difference between the front end and the back end, and how does that work?
Yeah, sure. So the front end, I always explain as the piece of the software that you interact with as a user. So you go to your browser, you put in app.stellarlabs.eu, what you see there, that is the front end of the application. It's basically all the code that runs in the browser. And then the backend is typically the bulk of the business logic. Like a lot is happening there, but the user typically doesn't see anything of that. So a lot of the times I think in the conversations we have, it's like, oh, there's a lot of backend work. That's typically not what the user sees or what makes like a big impact, because they cannot use it until there is a frontend that makes use of all of that work.
Okay, that's really interesting. And then how does UX kind of fit into that? That presumably, well, that definitely is a front end thing, I guess.
Absolutely. So UX is user experience. So it's about having small animations, but also the kind of paths that a user has to take to get to a certain point. Is it all intuitive? Is it all clear? Can they navigate the user interface without needing to read a manual? That's all super important in the age of web applications.
And I guess that's also where the accessibility piece is particularly important, or does that also dive into backend?
No, accessibility is indeed also a front-end thing. There we focus more on getting some keyboard access as well for people that maybe cannot use a mouse. That's a very, very broad area to go into as well, for sure.
Yeah. And we've definitely got at some point an expert we can get to come and talk about accessibility. I'm always curious about it, because, you know, it's all about the end user in the end. Okay, so that helps to understand what the difference between back end and front end. And I guess, you know, it's common sense, really, isn't it? Jan, what about the technologies and the kind of the programs we use at Stellar Labs? Now, you know, I was a COBOL programmer many years ago, and I know for certain we're not using COBOL, but what do we use?
Yeah, I'm really glad that I can confirm we're not using COBOL anymore. I learned it at school and never used it afterwards. What we are using, Nick already explained, we have front-end and back-end. For the front-end, we typically use TypeScript, which is basically kind of JavaScript but typed to go. Quite techy, of course, and then in combination with React, and that's what we are using on the front end. On the back end, we are running partially on Java and also partially on Node.js. We are building basically a serverless system on AWS, as we mentioned earlier, where we, based on events, try to communicate between all the different microservices that we have on our back end running. So it's quite a complicated system that's running over there. And then, of course, it's mentioned before, we use AI quite a lot, and the large language models, we use them and we try to communicate with AI, or we are communicating with AI quite a lot on our backend side to build the course, basically.
And presumably there's all those different languages, because each one kind of serves a particular purpose. Each one has its own particular, you know, I don't know, expertise in effect. And that's why we use different ones. Is that right?
Yes, indeed. The serverless we try to do in Node.js all the time because it's just faster, it's easier to implement also. And the Java is because a biggest part of our backend was written already in Java, so we kept on maintaining that part and we kept on adding new functionalities over there, of course. And each language has their own reasons why we are using it. And based also on our own experience from the past and our own knowledge, we also have to keep that in mind, of course. And we don't want to add too many new things all the time because new languages are appearing regularly. But we also have to make sure that it's maintainable for us also to keep on working on everything.
And I think that's something that sometimes people don't necessarily think about. The maintenance of code is just as important, and the kind of the recording and the communicating about code, the commenting in the code is so important, isn't it? So that if you have to go back in and look at somebody else's code, you know why that code was written and kind of how to fix it.
Yeah, indeed. And we all have to understand each other's code at all the time. And we can't just keep on inventing new things or start using new tools or new platforms all the time. We have to stick to something because we also trust on the platform, of course. We have to make sure that everything keeps on running stable and robust, as we mentioned before.
And this is a question that, you know, we hadn't sort of discussed earlier about asking, but I'm very curious. You two are really quick. If we find a bug, or, you know, if somebody reports a bug, you two are really quick at, you know, A, finding that bug and B, fixing that bug. What is it that helps you do that?
Well, first of all, as mentioned, we both are working with Pella for almost 2 years. So we both of us know the code by heart, or almost every line of code we have touched at least once. And then we also have a system in place, which is basically monitoring all our services at all time. And if something goes wrong, it notifies us and it gives us a reason why something goes wrong. So if some exceptions are happening, we can easily track what's happening, why is it happening, and then we can fix the problem quickly. Okay. So that's definitely also helping, the fact that this is in place and we can easily trace failures in the system.
Yeah, because I'm always very, very impressed with how quickly you solve anything that happens. And, you know, we all know that there is no coding without the occasional bug.
That's true. I confirm.
I can confirm that as well.
And I can confirm too. I had plenty of bugs in my COBOL coding all those years ago. Okay, so as a kind of a final question, you know, one of the things that, you know, we want Stella Labs to be robust, we want it to be safe, we want it to be reliable. What are the things that really help us to do that?
So I think one very important factor is that we built a platform on AWS. Yana's mentioned it before a few times already, but it really allows us to scale the platform and to also just maintain a great uptime. We're not managing any servers ourselves. We just get that as part of our contract with Amazon Web Services. And that helps a lot because managing servers is a whole different kind of part of IT and it takes a lot of time. And if we can avoid that, that just helps tremendously.
So we kind of let the experts in AWS to do their job.
Yes, that's what we pay them for. And as well, of course, if we need to grow, when we get a lot of new customers, we don't have an issue that we need to get new servers because it just automatically goes up. So it's perfect for the kind of business that we are, where we are in a growth scenario.
And I know we have other kind of collaborative projects going on where also, we do things, we do what we do, and then we can work with other people who do what they do best.
Yeah.
Anything else that, you know, is really important in terms of us being robust and secure?
Important one for security, because you mentioned security now. What we just wonder is, like, indeed, we ask external companies to regularly do a security test, of course, to make sure that our platform is secure. And that's really helpful for us also. We learn out of those reports each time. And last time we did one earlier this year. We got a very good result, so we're really happy. We did quite a lot of changes in the past 6 months based on security, and the last report confirmed that indeed all the changes we did were very good and really helped us on improving our security and having them really at the top level right now.
That's really good to hear, especially as we started Stellar Labs 4 years ago. And one of our big features that were focuses at that time was cybersecurity. So it's good to hear that we're walking our own talk.
Definitely.
This is a kind of random question for you, but we usually ask it at the end of this Mind the Skills Gap podcast, which is, you know, what are your tips for anybody who wants to learn a new skill? What are your best tips about learning a skill?
You want to go first, Jan?
I'll go first. Yeah. Personally, just get started. The first time you do something, you probably fail. That's not a problem. And the second time might also be a hard one. But if you can keep on and you manage to do something 10 times, 20 times, or 100 times, eventually you will get there. And just get started and try to not give up and keep on. The spaced repetition, for example, that we implement, that's for me one of the best tips. Keep on trying, keep on repeating what you've learned, and try to get the data that you're learning or anything that you're learning, get it in your long-term memory, basically, instead of the short-term. And that's really very important, I think.
What I really liked as I was watching you say that there, Jan, was you were really using your hands. And I think what you really wanted to say, you know, get it in your fingers. And I think for skills, it is really important that, you know, it is not just our brains that we need to get information and skills in, but, you know, it is also our bodies and fingers. So I really like the fact that you were saying with your hands, you were talking about getting it into your long-term memory, but long-term memory, yeah, as well as bodily memory.
Yeah, indeed.
And Nick, for you, what's the...
I knew it was a mistake to let Jan go first. I very much agree with what Jan says there. For example, when I do some programming, something new, I will typically just start with first versions of a thing. Like, you just do it to learn from it, then you throw it all away and you start again. And then from what you learned, you will do it better. And I think that's very much what Jan is saying, right? If you're learning something, start doing it so you can learn from doing it. Of course, any kind of extra information you can get, theory or anything else, is great material to start from. But without doing it, I don't think you can ever really learn something.
I think you're really right. And I like what I was kind of implying from what you were saying there, which is, you know, try it on something first and don't be precious about that first attempt. Yeah. You know, if it's wrong, if it doesn't work, if it's, you know, broken, if it looks ugly, you know, that really doesn't matter. You can just throw it away and you can just think, okay, now I can do it again. So it's, yeah, not being too precious, I think, is also really valuable, isn't it? Understanding that you're at the start and you're going to make lots of mistakes and lots of errors and ugly things to start with.
Yeah, that's a great explanation of what I was trying to say. Thank you, Stella.
you said it beautifully yourself. Jan and Nick, thank you both so much. I've really enjoyed this conversation with you. I've understood a bit more about, you know, the kind of the back end of Stellar Labs, the bit that perhaps the public don't see. And I want to thank you both so much for A, being on the podcast, and B, being, you know, our ace developers within Stellar Labs. So thank you both, and see you soon.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Stella. See you soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Mind the Skills Gap. If you liked it, hit subscribe. You can follow Stella Collins on LinkedIn and find out more about how Stellar Labs is tackling the skills gap on stellarlabs.io.